Good morning, everyone. Welcome to our panel discussion on the topic of transparency. Yesterday, the Roundtable's Alliance for Charitable Reform Project hosted two different panels, and those panels focused on what's happening in government, both state and local. And those sessions really reflected some of the work that ACR is best known for, and that is government relations. Now, today we're shifting gears a little bit to another area where ACR does a lot of work, and that is looking at big overarching policy discussions and exploring what those discussions might mean for private giving. Over the past 2 years, ACR has featured a panel at this very high-level topic of transparency. We're extremely pleased that our tenacity in driving conversation around this topic seems to be catching on. John Tyler and the other panelists here have been invited to conversations hosted by several other organizations in our sector. So that's a sign to us that there is a growing and continuing interest in conversations diving deep into this topic of transparency. We're interested in exploring transparency in depth for a few reasons, and I want to lay those out so you can kind of put this into context. Why does the Roundtable and ACR care? First, we believe that the question of whether foundation dollars are public or private money and calls for transparency are inextricably linked. As many of you know, there's a very persistent line of reasoning that starts out with this premise. Charitable dollars receive tax-favored treatment. The federal or state government would have collected taxes on those dollars but for that treatment. So therefore, a portion of those dollars, those charitable dollars, somehow belong to the public or the government, and the public, through the government, has some right to give direction over how those dollars are spent, beyond the requirements that the dollars go to charitable purposes. Well, many people in this room are probably baffled by that line of reasoning, but I can guarantee you that it does persist. Our panelist and prolific author, John Tyler, has co-authored a seminal monograph that cites the legal precedent for why this position is not accurate. It confirms what we have always held, that foundation assets and, frankly, all private charitable contributions are private money and therefore subject to limited government oversight. By the way, I want to note that a second edition of John's monograph is available out front for those of you who need some, you know, bedside reading. It's a great piece and has really been important to the Roundtable. Well, now, how is transparency linked to this idea? Well, if the dollars are public in some way, then it gives the government the ability to go, arguably, by others, beyond the limited oversight that I've laid out. Now, another reason why we're so interested in this topic is there seems to be an obsession with this thing called transparency. And what we've found generally is that the term has kind of become devoid of any real meaning. Further, it's often thrown around as an absolute. Transparency is good. If everyone is transparent, then we know what everyone is doing and they're following the rules. Or the public has a right to know. But the conversations don't seem to dig any deeper than that. Is transparency really inherently good? Does the public really have a right to know everything? And this concept that if we know what's going on, everyone is behaving appropriately, does that actually create a false security blanket about the sector? What are the potential unintended consequences of extensive transparency? And most importantly, and this is something we're going to talk about here in part, is why do we need to know this information? What are the pros and cons for foundations? Now, John Tyler, I noted he was a prolific author, he has written a soon-to-be-released monograph tackling this topic of transparency. Now, what we have for you today is the companion guide to that piece. It's the short-form practical guide to that piece. Everyone has a copy of it. This is by way of example of what John is writing about. Now, this is not a guide through the conversation we're necessarily having today, because we're going to look at a part of what John addresses in that monograph. But we did want you to have a copy of this because I think it illustrates how we're addressing the topic of transparency overall. Now, at the last two annual meetings, I noted that we had panel discussions on the topic of transparency. The first session, which was 2 years ago, looked at the kind of the pros and cons of voluntary transparency, and Andrew, you participated on that panel. Then last year, we explored government-mandated transparency and looked at both the degrees of openness that are mandated by law and efforts by government potentially to expand that authority beyond those limits. Now, this year, we're going to look at transparency through a slightly different lens. As we continually monitor this topic, we've seen a trend. Calls for transparency seem to be rooted in calls for accountability. So today, we're going to explore this intersection of transparency and accountability. Now, I want to turn to our esteemed panel. As I mentioned earlier, this transparency topic seems to be the hot topic that everyone's talking about. But frankly, there are really very few people who've looked at the issue in any depth and any nuance. And our three panelists today happen to be part of that very small group that has actually thought about this topic in any detail and wrestled with a lot of the issues. And they come from three very different perspectives, so I think this should be interesting. Now, their bios are in your program, so I'm not going to go into a lot of detail about them, but let me just do brief introductions. John Tyler, who I've already mentioned a couple of times, is our resident author on this topic of transparency and also on public money. And as many of you know, John is the general counsel of the Ewing Marion Kauffman Foundation. Now, Rick Cohen, down at the end here, his
on the far right, where he
on the far right.
Depends on your perspective from the audience. Who's
for them, he's
just an observation.
Yes. Now, his formal title is national correspondent for a nonprofit quarterly. You know, Rick jokes with me that I invite him to come to these panels to be our pinata, but I wanted to point out to Rick that you also have a stick too. So all joking aside, Rick is one of the most insightful, persistent, and intelligent commentators in this sector, and we really appreciate his contributions as much as we might agree or disagree with some of them, but it's absolutely important and imperative for these discussions. And then finally, Andrew Schultz, not finally, thirdly, I should say, I guess, is Andrew Schultz, and many of you know Andrew from his long years at the Council on Foundations, including his role as the head of their public policy department. Andrew accepted the newly created vice president's position at Foundation Source just this summer, and we're really looking forward to seeing how his new role rolls out there. So now, let's begin. I'm going to explain how we're going to address this topic, just to give you a little bit of a framework. We're going to break our discussion into three areas. The first is, what is accountability? The second is accountability for what and to whom. And then thirdly, how should the information about accountability be delivered and who determines that? Then we're going to tie up the conversation with a general question I'm going to ask each of our three panelists to answer. Now, to keep this conversational, John Tyler had, I think, the great suggestion that within each of these three areas that we're going to explore, we will be taking questions so we can keep this somewhat engaging. So let's move on to our first question. Setting aside what we mean by transparency, what do we really mean by accountability? What are the associated consequences? Do we mean accountability is just information only? And let's think about, is philanthropy government? Is it a publicly traded company? Is it something else? And should it be held to similar levels of accountability as those sectors? And John, I'm going to kick off with you.
Thank you, Sue. And thank you, everybody, for your wonderful interest in this topic. It's I think, very important for philanthropy. I think it's very important for the charitable sector. And I think it's very important for the roles that the sector plays vis-a-vis government, vis-a-vis business. Without distinctions, we lose the role of philanthropy. And there's some push in talking about public money and talking about transparency that we're in some danger of losing the important roles that philanthropy and the charitable sector play. So having these conversations is helping better define things that are in many ways undefined, which then empowers the sector to fulfill those roles. So today, talking about accountability. Accountability is a word that gets thrown around a lot. Foundations are said to need to be accountable to grantees, accountable to government, accountable to the public. But you know, what does that mean? And they actually mean different things in different ways. In one sense, and to me the most real sense, there is a real accountability to the government. There's a real accountability. Foundations do get tax benefits. They're tax-exempt entities, and donors who contribute to them get charitable deductions. So there should be accountability with regard to that, in much the same ways as there's accountabilities for other tax treatment. So businesses get tax credits, they get deductions, they get all sorts of different incentives that can be baked into tax treatment. Their responsibility is to account for that treatment, which means they've got to keep records, they've got to use the monies in the way that it's intended, and then they have to report on their tax returns that they've done that, subject to audit and being called for having misspent it. Foundations have a responsibility under the tax compact to be organized and operated for charitable purposes, not to to further private benefit, not to impermissibly lobby or engage in political activity, and to provide certain reporting. There's real accountability for that, and that's actually just for the tax side. At the state level, there's property tax exemptions, there's attorney general oversight, and the role of the attorney general oversight is not necessarily the tax side of it. It's actually to protect donors and to help ensure and protect donor intent, and furtherance of the charitable purposes. Filing the tax returns are intended to help facilitate all that. So there's real accountability for that, and there's real consequences for failing to abide by that, all of which makes sense. That's very different from accountability to grantees, accountability to the public. Too often the word account, so you've got real accountability for which there's consequences. And you've got this other notion of accountability for which there are no consequences, and arguably shouldn't be consequences. So is it really accountability, or are we talking about information sharing? Are we talking about engagement? And we'll get into some of these things later. In some ways, the public talks about accountability, and actually some policymakers talk about the need for quid pro quo. What are we getting in return for the tax favor treatment? And the presumption there is it's not just the tax side of it, but what are we getting? The presumption there is that philanthropy in the charitable sector more broadly is a purely economic engine or purely economic components. And it loses sight of the fact that what we do, while it does have important economic consequences, and while it does contribute to the economy, and the philanthropic collaborative has done some studies, we've got another one coming out in a short time, that talks about the economic contributions of the sector. But it's not just economic. And the quid pro quo approach, what are we getting in return? Are we getting a dollar for dollar value? And we need to hold the sector accountable for that dollar-for-dollar value exchange, understates the value and importance of the sector. It's also not the quid pro quo analysis fails on an economic standpoint. It assumes that money that goes to philanthropy and charity would otherwise go to government, which is not the case. So to say that government is losing money it's a false premise, because there's no guarantee that that money would actually go to the government. It might be consumed, it might do other things, and it might get other tax breaks. And in another sense, if the presumption is government, what are we getting in return for that? That presumes that the charitable sector's purpose is to replace government. Not just as a supplement for government, but to replace government. So therefore, if the sector's not there, the government would be providing those services. So the quid pro quo approach assumes government's going to provide the services, and they will do it at the same cost and with the same efficiency. Again, not a safe assumption. And so you get into all these issues about accountability for what? What does it mean? Are there consequences? And I think accountability in the real sense is limited to the law. And that doesn't mean we shouldn't have conversations with grantees. It doesn't mean that there's not engagement that should happen. It doesn't mean there's not information that should be shared. It's just not in furtherance of accountability the way that it should be used.
Rick, what do you think of that?
Well, first of all, I'm thrilled to be here for this panel. Mike?
Yep, you're on.
It's great to be here at this panel. This kind of discussion, I think, actually highlights how difficult these issues are.
Yeah.
If there were easy answers, we'd just all march out and go do them.
Yeah.
Listening to John, what strikes me is that foundations are actually, in the term of, that people are talking about lately, hybrid organizations.
Yeah.
It's rather public or private. There's a little bit of everything in foundations, which makes the accountability issue in some ways difficult and challenging for foundations. So when we talk about transparency, we're really talking about accountability, fundamentally. We're talking about a different kind of accountability, though. When you describe legal and the other kinds of accountability, I think of process accountability and substantive accountability. There are process elements where you file the right forms. Hopefully there's somebody in the IRS reading what you've sent them, so you're not going through this for no purpose, and many times there isn't. I've talked to IRS people where often it's a check-off, did you submit it, and nobody's reading and analyzing some of the long stuff that's in a 990PF. At the AG's office, they're so understaffed. They're really looking at fundraising issues. They're not looking at these other accountability issues. So in many ways, the real issue of accountability is substantive accountability. It's what are you doing as foundations, and how do you justify the fact, whether you're public, private, or I think really hybrid, the fact that you have $500 billion of taxes and money that you're dealing with, that you're holding. And foundations have to ask, and I think many times, and I've talked to foundation people, many times they sort of assume this and don't ask it, which is, does my foundation merit the tax exemption? Does it merit, and are we delivering and functioning in a way that justifies the investment that people have made by letting us control these dollars? Is the public's trust in us, in our stewardship of these funds, warranted by what our grants, our investments, our expenditures, and our non-financial activities, which are also very important, too. And I think these are questions of the bottom line contributions of foundations to society. So that's a different kind of accountability that is not just a matter of what do you report, but what kind of conversations are foundations engaged in? How are they explaining themselves to the public? How are they actually hearing what the public says about them? How are they providing enough information so that the questions about whether they merit that tax exemption are really out there to be answered? And the particular part of foundations that I think makes this important is that you're a 501c3. Mm-hmm. You're not like any other 501c3. I mean, most 501c3s out there don't have endowments. Most of them don't have operating budgets to begin with. I mean, they have so little in the way of fund balances at the end of the year. If you take a deep breath, you can blow them over. So that, you know, the reality is that you're a different kind of organization, and therefore there's a different kind of questioning that you should do of yourselves as much as questioning that the public and the nonprofit sector should have of you. And that doesn't mean that you're government. It means that you're different than government, and you're different than regular nonprofits. It's based on a different kind of responsibility that is a super level kind of responsibility. And I know that's sort of inchoate to suggest, but I think it's important. I don't think that means that government controls what you do. I mean, In 2006, and I should probably shouldn't say this for my old NCRP friends, but I used to be head of the National Council for, National Committee for Responsive Philanthropy, which is why I'm the liberal piñata in most cases. But I said it would be dangerous for government to attempt to legislate attempts to require what foundations deliver as preferred kinds of grant making.
Yeah.
And I thought that would be dangerous. It is not dangerous to say foundations ought to be explaining what they're doing and absorbing questions about it and engaging in a vigorous public dialogue about it, because it is not just a matter of assuming that it's good, but being able to explain that it's good and justify it. And it's not enough to say we go through the mechanics of having lots of evaluations that prove our mettle. In many cases, those evaluations actually are counterproductive. You're micro actors, for as big as you are. You're making micro grants addressing macro problems. So that the idea that somehow there's going to be some metric that's going to say, well, here's how you prove your accountability, that your micro grant generates X, Y, and Z, is silly. It's a concept that doesn't make sense. It's how do you explain how, as foundations, as part of an economic system, and the first panel, I think, was talking, the first opening discussion, was talking about you as an economic, as part of an economic system, how do you explain what your role is in that economic system, and how your grants are being used as levers for change, and how, what kind of change they are producing, and what kind of efforts do you have? And I think you have to go back to looking at more than just grants. It's your grants. It's your loans, your loan guarantees. It's your investments, whether they are market investments or market-related investments. It is your advocacy, and I'll come back to that later, because I think what you even heard this morning talks about the foundation role in public policy advocacy, which I think merits as much discussion of transparency as anything else. So how do you describe how you use all of that, whether you're supporting welfare reform or entrepreneurial activity or museums or the symphony? How are you describing that in a way that says, here's how we are making a difference and here's how we're absorbing that kind of questioning? So I'm a little bit, I guess in Sue's terms, I'm a little obsessive about transparency, but I think it's obsessive about a kind of dialogue that, to me, is the essence of what democracy is. And foundations are part of that democratic system.
We've morphed a little into our second question, as I suspected would happen. It's hard to keep these things in three buckets. And I do want to get back a little later in our conversation to the how of accountability, because you've talked a little bit about telling your story to the public. John, you're talking about accountability to the government in certain ways. And I'm going to go to our second question, and after that question, because we've kind of morphed these two, we'll open it up to some questions and then move on to our third question. So the second question was accountability for what? And we've started to talk about that a little bit. John talked about accountability to, as did Rick, to certain processes that the government has. And then we go into sort of accountability for what you're doing and how that's contributing to the public good, if you will. There's also is a suggestion sometimes about should foundations be accountable for financial frugality? In other words, you know, are you spending the least amount to run your place? Is everything being done in the most efficient way? And then this, we're going to bring into this the question of accountable to whom. We've talked about government. We've talked about the public. Woven into this is another term that gets thrown around a lot, which is the term of stakeholders. Who are the stakeholders? Rick and John were both on a panel, and Andrew was in the audience for a discussion we had at Aspen Institute. And this issue of stakeholders, I think, really ended up driving the conversation. So we did want to bring it in here. So this idea of what is a stakeholder, and for foundations, what does it mean in the context of what you do? And what about others? Now, I want to clarify here, because the title of the session was a little misleading, because it brought in the word effectiveness. And as our panel was preparing for this session, we realized that this whole idea of effectiveness, there's this parallel drawn: if you're accountable, well, then maybe you're also effective, and another one of those nexus that gets drawn sometimes. we're going to concede that that nexus is sometimes drawn, maybe accurately, maybe inaccurately. But we will touch on issues perhaps of effectiveness, but I just wanted to let you know we're not going to dive deeply into issues of effectiveness because that's a whole other panel topic. Maybe that's next year's panel topic. So, Andrew, I'm going to turn to you kind of to hone in on these ideas of effective for what, to whom.
Right. Great. Thank you. And I guess what I should say is since I've only been at Foundation Source for 2 months, I feel compelled to say that my opinions are not necessarily those of my employer or at my soon-to-be former employer. So, but thank you for being here. For a moment there, I felt like Barack Obama. I was listening intently and scribbling notes, and I just want to make sure you know that it's out of respect and admiration for these two gentlemen, and the things they say inspire me to think of other things I want to say. You know, I think this question of what is accountability and accountability to whom, they're inexorably intertwined. You know, John's point about legal accountability is actually critical. There is a grand bargain we have made. We have applied for exempt status. We've sought that special treatment from the government. And, you know, there's two pieces of that. What are we going to do to merit that deduction, that special tax treatment? And what are we going to agree not to do once it's given to us? And that's a really important sort of accountability. But that's accountability to the government. The government needs the information essential to police that bargain. Where it has gotten complicated is that I think we rightly decided, our policymakers rightly decided that this is largely a voluntary compliance sector. We depend on the good intentions of almost everyone. As a result, the money the IRS spends auditing the philanthropic community is almost always a disastrous waste of money because they spend so much, they have to do it, it's critical, it's essential. But a decision we made some time ago is, you know, a very effective way for us to police the sector because we're largely voluntary compliant. It's a few bad actors, it truly is a few bad actors that tarnish the community. We as a sector, we as a society decided that an important trade-off would be we would make certain aspects of our legal compliance transparent. That would help ferret out abuses before they became, you know, consistent and across the board. And we basically deputized the general public and the media to assist the Internal Revenue Service efficiently in policing the sector. And I think it has been very successful. Immediately following the change in the law, the publication of the 990, we saw the Boston Globe spotlight series that really sort of brought out a lot of horrendous behavior that was hiding in plain daylight. I deeply remember the Cabot Foundation, you know, when the Boston Globe called them and said, what are you bugging me for? I've been putting this on my tax return for 10 years, and the IRS doesn't have a problem, so why do you? And that is a rational opinion to have, regardless of how irrational some of his other opinions might have been. Like, I've been actively disclosing this. So I do think the daylight thing is an important evolution in our sector, but it's deeply complicated, this question about transparency and accountability. I think there's only really two fundamental accountabilities. One is the legal accountability to the government to comply with the laws, and whatever the role of the public is, something that we need to continue to debate in assuring that. And the other is accountability to your own integrity. And that is you say what you're going to do, and you do what you're going to say, and you know what, you're willing to take the heat. The independence, the innovation of philanthropy is something that is difficult. We are blessed as a nation to have a vibrant philanthropic community. We are not entitled to it. And if we continue to mess with philanthropy and this magic goose that laid the golden egg, and we say we're entitled to a philanthropic community, and we're going to impose whatever burdens we want to on it, don't be surprised if people say, you know what? This model isn't working for him anymore. I'm not going to participate in philanthropy. So we just need to be very careful about what those decisions are. And so I would say the thing about integrity, your own integrity, you know, if your process is we don't accept grant applications, we don't carefully have scientific metrics, we are moved by things that we don't understand, and that's how we make grants, If you disclose that and that's what you do and that's how you behave, there's going to be heat that comes with that. I assure you. People are going to think that's the wrong way to do it. They're going to call you up and tell you you're an idiot. They're going to suggest that the only way to do philanthropy is their way to do philanthropy. And one of the things about, you know, having that integrity, stick to your guns, do what you want to do, believe what you want to do. There's legal compliance that's essential. But other than that, I think the accountability is really to yourself. There's this tremendous hubris out there that everybody thinks they know what's the best way to do this, that, or the other thing. And so my way is the best way. If you'd only see it my way, we'd all be better. I don't think that's what makes philanthropy effective.
Or America great.
Yeah, or America great. I would say, you know, just really quickly to touch on the effectiveness thing, I think it is unethical to be ineffective. But we don't always know why we're effective and why we're ineffective. And so I think we have to be very careful about labeling people ineffective or ineffective. But if you know you're being ineffective and you have no interest at all in getting better, I think that's unethical. It is not illegal, but I think it is unethical. So I think there is a connection, and that's why it reverts back to accountability to yourself and your integrity. So those are my thoughts.
Do either have of the two panelists want to comment on Andrew's comments? I see Rick nodding his head aggressively. And then John.
Well, this goes to my issue about stakeholders. And so should I jump into that? Or
jump on
sure.
In.
I feel bad that I'm mucking up
the agenda.
Our game plan is totally mucked.
You remember
so
when we
fine.
Talked, we said this is all subject to being thrown out.
Yeah.
So you're okay.
We threw out our game.
Well, see, this is a problem I think that foundations in this way have created for themselves. If you agree with Andrew's position that the responsibility is, of course, for the grand bargain with government and with the issue of integrity and doing what you say you're going to do and hopefully doing it effectively as well.
Yeah.
The problem is the foundations have described this whole melange of other things they do. And the term of use is stakeholders. You can go through any foundation literature and everybody's talking about stakeholders. Remember the social scientist Donald Schoen, who was at MIT, he had a concept of common currency. The common currency is now stakeholders. But the more it's said, the less it means. It's sort of like public-private partnership. What does that mean? You know, stakeholders, what does that mean? So you really wonder, what are we all talking about when we say we have stakeholders, but don't ask questions or don't get involved or we don't really want to entertain your stuff? I think foundations, if they have that kind of integrity, have to be responsive and open to their stakeholders as part of the accountability process. Otherwise, drop the language and let's move on to it. Some foundations, I think, have done this where they've actually learned the issue of effectiveness as well. I think of an example of the Northwest Area Foundation, which made a very big commitment over some years to invest huge amounts of money to address poverty in, I forget, 10 cities up in the Northwest. And I give them credit for saying, we blew it.
Right.
And what they looked and how they learned about that was not that they were behaving by their integrity. Carl Stauber, who ran that foundation, a man of great integrity. Mm-hmm. He was wrong. And the feedback he got from the community, from his stakeholders, from experts, from people at a stake in the foundation, from grantees, from public officials, was feedback that said, you know, that if you had listened to us initially, maybe you would learn some of this. But listen to us now, and it was completely wrong. And the foundation said, "Thanks for that information, and let's rethink things." Mm-hmm. I think there's a very important role of listening to stakeholders, who are the people who have a vested interest in a foundation, to say, "We have something to teach you about what you're doing, and we are part of your accountability, so that even if you're behaving fully with integrity, and you very may well be, there's something going on with your sort of dual identity of having a foot as a private donation entity and having a foot as being a public actor in a way to respond to what's happening with the result of your resources and, again, your non-financial resources in terms of its effect on the communities that you serve.
So I think one of the really critical things you said is you have to be. And what does have to be mean? Like,
right.
I think everybody agrees that, like, accountability in many situations is positive. There's ethical, there's moral questions. Like, what does it mean to say you have to be accountable to your stakeholders? Technically, you don't have to do anything. If you don't mind people calling you bad names and that sort of thing, you can go hide in a hole and you can be really ineffective, terrible. You don't have to be. So the question is, what do we have to do? And what should we have to do? And I think this general blanket transparency is, rather than have these very hard and important substantive conversations at the policy level about what is the bargain, what should we change? We've punted and been like, well, I'll just make everybody disclose everything and we'll let the general public and everybody kind of mush this around and create this much less deliberative have to, because it's all driven by public pressure and that sort of thing, rather than a coherent debate about what is actually mandated and what is just optional as long as you're willing to put up with the consequences.
And I think, and that's where the conversations get muddied. When we talk about transparency, and transparency is an ultimate good, as Sue mentioned, when we talk about accountability, accountability for what? And there's a slippery slope. I agree with two things Rick said. Maybe more, but two, I'm gonna emphasize.
Two's good.
I'm getting better every time I speak.
Yeah. At least two.
Yeah, last time it was one. I disagree with it. So, part of what Rick talks about, and I agree with, and it was actually the very first transparency session that we had 2 years ago. It was on the need for, not the mandate for, but the need for greater voluntary transparency, greater voluntary engagement by foundations, with all sorts of different people. But it's voluntary, it should be strategic, it should be mission-driven. Not every foundation, frankly, should engage. For some foundations, because of what they do, it's actually dangerous, not just to mission, but to people, to open the kimono. There are some missions where people die because of philanthropy's engagement. So it needs to be strategic. Now, I think that that's very few. I don't want to paint a broad brush and say that applies everywhere. I think the more foundations engage within their strategy, within their mission, the more effective they can be. The problem is you start to run down a slippery slope. And you start to, there's a danger of running into mandatory words, mandatory thinking, mandated thinking, and then maybe you start to compromise what it is you're doing. Then you start to slip into, well, we have stakeholders, we need to be accountable to stakeholders, we should find out what they think. And if we as philanthropy, so the sector, are doing the things that people like, then we're not doing enough to fulfill our roles in society. If we become a majoritarian enterprise in our social, economic, and political systems, we're not serving the roles that we are intended to say. That's not to say nobody should pay attention and support popular things. I think there's a lot of reasons to support popular things when you as a foundation decide to do that. When we as a sector compromise our independence, we compromise our service to our American systems. The second thing that I agreed with what Rick said is we need to quit using the word stakeholder. It's lost its meaning. And frankly, I would argue, and this is where we might disagree, should never have had meaning in the land of philanthropy. Who could be stakeholders? Grant recipients, unsuccessful applicants, potential recipients of grants. The people, causes, and missions served by them. The employees of all of these organizations and foundations. Others who work in and fund the same charitable missions, including other foundations, other individuals, other funders, other charities, other government agencies, vendors, suppliers, creditors, researchers, academics, theoreticians, communities, and others. How are we going to be accountable to stakeholders, for crying out loud? How are we going to make decisions when we have to contemplate all of these things and we have to prioritize them and we have to give weight to all of these things? If we're stakeholder bound, then where does mission fit in? Where does donor intent fit in? Now, note I'm not saying don't pay attention to these folks. We do. If we want to be effective, if we want to achieve our outcomes, we have to be able to do what Northwest Area Foundation did, which is to ask questions, to get feedback. to let people know what it is we're doing to the degrees that it fits strategy and mission and why we're doing them. That helps us achieve mission. It can help us achieve donor intent. And frankly, if we're running contrary to public views, it helps explain why we're not doing what the community thinks we should do, which then, you know, maybe that upsets some people. Maybe it upsets further. Maybe it's sticking a, you know, poking somebody in the eye. But there's a lot of people that are going to say, oh, at least we now understand. And therefore, okay, that's fine. That's your prerogative. That's your right. You know, please keep us posted, which is actually generally going to be in the interest of philanthropy to keep them posted as well. But also reckon keeping them posted in what time frame? Philanthropy has a long time frame generally. So if we say, okay, here's our first year report, we're doing terrible, does that mean we're ineffective and should stop? Or does it mean we, you know, this is a project that's got a 5-year, 10-year, 20-year time horizon, and we have to be patient capital? I agree with Andrew that maintaining ineffectiveness in the face of overwhelming evidence that's the wrong thing to do, and that no changes should be made, I think it's unethical, I think it's immoral, but it's not illegal. And, you know, dare I say it, but under the law and in the United States of America, it's everybody's right to be stupid.
I hope for everyone in the audience that this panel has illustrated not only how important it is to be having these conversations, but really how complicated and nuanced these topics are. And for any of you who are in the audience who participate in regional groups or professional groups or other types of groups where you think this conversation would be helpful, John and I, and I'm sure the gentleman on this panel, and we have a small sort of faculty of others who we know are articulate on this topic, we would love to host these types of conversations in other places. So please, we welcome your inquiries. Thank you all for filling the room and for being so attentive. And thank you, everyone.
But you truly can't put your name on it.